Today is Tuesday, May the 5th, and you are listening to the World Socialist Website. Trump's deployment of warships to Strait of Hormuz escalates Iran war. By the WSWS Editorial Board. The announcement by President Donald Trump that the US military will guide commercial shipping through the Strait of Hormuz marks a major escalation of this criminal war of aggression. The World Socialist website calls for the immediate mobilization of workers in the United States and internationally to demand U.S. troops out of the Middle East, and an unconditional end to the U.S.-Israeli war against Iran, which threatens the entire world with catastrophe. According to U.S. Central Command, Project Freedom will involve the mobilization of guided missile destroyers, more than 100 aircraft, and some 15,000 service members. Within hours of Trump's statement, the fragile truce that brought over 6 weeks of savage US-led bombing of Iranian cities to an end on April 7th began breaking down. Trump alleged that US forces had destroyed 7 Iranian small boats, while the United Arab Emirates reported 15 drones and 4 missiles fired toward its territory from Iran on Monday. The Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps said it fired warning shots at U.S. destroyers approaching the strait. The Strait of Hormuz, through which roughly one-fifth of the world's oil supply passes, cannot simply be secured by escorting tankers with warships. Trump is recklessly endangering the lives of thousands of American sailors and airmen, placing them in the line of fire in a narrow choke point where Iran retains the ability to disrupt traffic with drones, missiles, and small naval vessels. The point is not to protect commerce, but to create the conditions for a provocation. Any clash can be seized upon as the pretext for a new stage of imperialist barbarism. Trump's escalation flows directly from the failure of the war to achieve its objectives. Washington began this war on the assumption that Iran could be rapidly coerced into submission, that its state structures would fracture under decapitation strikes and mass bombardment, and that US control over the Persian Gulf could be asserted without provoking major disruption. However, Iran has not capitulated, and the strait remains contested. On Friday, Trump, employing the language of a gangster, declared that if Iran did not make a deal, the United States would go and just blast the hell out of them and finish them forever. Such statements define the logic of the escalation now underway, a war of annihilation. Once the decision is made to wage an illegal war for domination of strategic choke points, the pressure to escalate acquires a momentum of its own. Nothing can be ruled out, including the use of nuclear weapons. Their deployment would mean mass slaughter on an unprecedented scale. It would risk a radiological and environmental catastrophe across the Persian Gulf, poisoning air and water, threatening the region's desalination-dependent populations, and contaminating critical energy infrastructure. It would detonate global consequences, fueling a wider war, tearing through world trade and supply chains, and pushing humanity to the brink of a general conflagration. This is not simply a consequence of bad policy decisions or the product of one administration's recklessness. It is rooted in the insoluble contradictions of American imperialism itself. For 35 years, the central project of American foreign policy has been to offset the long-term erosion of U.S. economic dominance through the use of military force. In these conditions, militarism takes on an increasingly existential character for the ruling class. Retreat threatens the credibility of its global power, while escalation courts catastrophe. The consequences of this escalation fall first, and hardest, on the working class, in Iran and the Middle East, in the United States and across the world. The war has already consumed nearly $50 billion, according to estimates, while the administration pleads poverty when it comes to any social need. The same government, demanding unlimited funds for missiles and destroyers, could not find a fraction of that to prevent the collapse of Spirit Airlines, which has thrown 17,000 workers out of work as war-driven fuel costs surged. The disruption of shipping through the Strait of Hormuz has driven oil prices above $110 per barrel and injected a new shock into an already fragile world economy. Airlines in Europe and North America are cutting capacity and cancelling tens of thousands of flights, translating directly into layoffs, reduced hours, and intensified exploitation for pilots, cabin crew, ground staff, and maintenance workers, while tens of thousands of seafarers are effectively trapped in the Gulf amid the danger of attack. Higher energy costs ripple outward into every supply chain, raising transport and import costs, accelerating inflation, and driving up prices for food and basic necessities. This crisis is global in the most literal sense. Disruptions in the transit of key food inputs and fertilizer compounds through the region are already translating into mass impoverishment, deepening hunger and the threat of famine for millions in the poorest countries, who will be made to pay for a war waged in the interests of the imperialist powers and the financial oligarchy. While there are bitter conflicts within the ruling class, these relate entirely to the questions of tactics. There is unanimity on the goal of regime change in Iran and US imperialist domination over the Middle East. The New York Times editorial board, speaking for the Democratic Party, declared last month that it is a mistake for any Americans, including Mr. Trump's critics, to root for this country to fail. The Democratic Party functions as a partner in the prosecution of imperialist policy. This includes prominent figures associated with the Democratic Party's so-called left, including Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and the trade union bureaucracies. The union apparatus held May Day Strong events that avoided mentioning the war on Iran in order to keep a lid on the mounting opposition within the working class. The decisive factor is the intervention of the working class. Only the independent mobilization of workers, acting as a class and uniting across borders, can halt the war drive, block the descent into wider conflagration, and oppose the social counter-revolution that accompanies militarism abroad with repression and austerity at home. The international working class is already being driven into struggle by the war and its consequences. In opening the International May Day online rally on Friday, WSWS International Editorial Board Chairman David North noted that in the first quarter of 2026, some 458 strikes were recorded across 8 European countries alone, a significant rise compared with 2025. In the US, over 8 million joined marches, No Kings demonstrations against Trump's erection of a fascist dictatorship. The same contradictions that produced World War I in 1914 resulted in socialist revolution in Russia in 1917, North explained. The same historical dynamic is at work today. The global crisis of capitalism that underlies the eruption of imperialist violence is also preparing the explosion of revolutionary struggle by the international working class. The World Socialist website calls on workers in the US and throughout the world to demand, stop the war against Iran, withdraw all US forces from the Middle East, expropriate war profits and use them to guarantee jobs, wages, benefits and social programs, defend democratic rights, build an independent movement of the working class against war and dictatorship, international in scope and socialist in program. We urge workers to call meetings in your workplace and community. Discuss what is happening and what must be done. Break from the Democratic Party and all attempts to subordinate opposition to the institutions of the capitalist state. Build rank-and-file committees and link up with workers internationally. These demands can only be realised within a broader perspective, one that recognises that war is not an aberration, but a product of capitalism itself. The fight against war is inseparable from the fight for socialism. Reorganisation of economic life on the basis of human need, rather than profit, and the establishment of democratic control by the working class over the vast resources of society. Wall Street prepares to pick the bones clean. Spirit workers lose paychecks and benefits as executives seek $10.7 million in retention bonuses. By Tom Hall. Have you been impacted by Spirit's bankruptcy? Contact the WSWS to tell us your story. All submissions will be kept anonymous. As ultra-low-cost carrier, Spirit Airlines' 17,000 workers learned overnight that they had lost their jobs, benefits, and potentially their final paychecks. Spirit's lawyers filed a motion in federal bankruptcy court in New York, requesting $10.7 million in retention bonuses for executives and managers overseeing the wind-down, with undisclosed additional amounts for the top three executives. Antonio Mancino, president of the Association of Flight Attendants, the AFACWA, Local 76, said Sunday, "We don't even know if we're going to get our last paychecks. Most of us are going to have to pull out retirement savings and use it as emergency funds, because a lot of flight attendants live paycheck to paycheck." Medical, dental, and vision benefits for all Spirit employees were terminated the moment the last flight landed. The Airline Pilots Association advised its 2,000-plus Spirit members to immediately download their own pay stubs and W-2s before the company's systems shut down. Workers were deliberately kept in the dark, up until the last minute. WARN Act notices, legally required advanced warning of mass layoffs, were issued only after the shutdown. Spirit's explanation in its court filing was that publicising layoffs earlier would have hindered its efforts to secure additional funding. Spirit has told the court that it does not even have enough cash on hand to organise a structured auction of its remaining assets, including 131 aircraft. Instead, the company is requesting permission to allow it to abandon this equipment or let creditors repossess them. Most of Spirit's fleet was not actually owned by the airline, but leased to it by major banks such as Wells Fargo. Bankruptcy law prioritizes the company's secured creditors, the Wall Street banks, and aircraft lessors, like Wells Fargo, over workers. Pilots, flight attendants, and ground staff will get whatever is left after Wall Street has picked the bones clean. The impact of the shutdown, not only for ex-employees, but for workers in communities surrounding the airline's hubs, will be devastating. Around 3,000 jobs are affected in Broward County, in South Florida, including at the company's headquarters and at the Fort Lauderdale International Airport. "I haven't been in the job market for 29 years, Tashia, a former Spirit employee of 29 years, told local news station WSBN at a Broward County career fair Monday. The impact on travellers is equally severe. Spirit's ridership was concentrated among working class and lower income passengers, owing to base fares only a fraction of the cost of traditional carriers. Spirit was the second largest airline by flights at the Detroit Metropolitan Airport, carrying 1.7 million passengers in 2025. Donna Jar, a Metro Detroit resident, told CBS News she had booked a Spirit flight to her nephew's high school graduation in New Jersey and that rebooking on another carrier will cost several hundred dollars more. She plans to drive 10 hours each way instead. Brittany McGee told the Detroit News she had booked Spirit months in advance for a family cruise, with 8 relatives travelling together. Spirit was keeping everyone in check. If there's no affordable option, no one's going to be flying. Travel analyst Lee Abamonte told Fox News that Spirit almost single-handedly kept pricing competitive in many markets in the country. With Spirit being no longer viable, there is no pressure on legacy carriers to keep prices lower. The 47 years of airline deregulation, sold to the public as a guarantor of competitive pricing, has produced a market dominated by 4 carriers controlling 80% of domestic traffic. Other carriers have offered rebooking fares capped at $200 for displaced Spirit passengers, but these are time-limited and route-restricted. The response of the airline unions has been limited to grovelling appeals to the Trump administration and bankruptcy courts. On Saturday, the AFA-CWA president, Sarah Nelson, sent a letter to the Transportation Secretary, Sean Duffy, and Acting Secretary of Labor, Keith Sonderling, calling on them to deploy the full capacity of the federal government to support Spirit workers. The letter attributed the collapse to global geopolitical tensions that have driven a sharp and sustained increase in fuel prices. Geopolitical tensions is Nelson's polite reference to the criminal attack on Iran, launched by the government she is now petitioning to support ex-Spirit workers. Nelson references the war by name later, without attributing blame to the Trump administration. But the White House already showed its stance by refusing to bail out Spirit, which Duffy justified to a press conference Saturday with the absurd claim that we oftentimes don't have $500 million laying around. This is a government which has requested $200 billion for the war and a $500 billion increase in military spending next year. The political establishment, Democrats and Republicans alike, had no problem finding over $2 trillion in corporate bailout money in a few days in 2020, including $54 billion for the airline industry. Duffy's remarks amounts to a statement of policy that the working class must be made to pay for the war, both through mass layoffs and sharp airfare hikes. Nelson's letter urged the Trump administration to intervene with the bankruptcy court to prioritize payment of workers' earned compensation, maintain Spirit flight attendants' health care through the end of 2026, provide a $600 weekly supplement to state unemployment benefits for 6 months, coordinate with other airlines to prioritize hiring displaced Spirit workers, supported by a temporary federal wage subsidy, and extend FSA, flexible spending accounts, a form of employer-sponsored medical benefit, usage periods, with emergency childcare subsidies. Such demands, however, can only be won through struggle. The example for Spirit workers is the ongoing fight by Turkish miners for back pay, severance for laid-off workers, and other demands. They marched 120 miles, 190 kilometres, to the nation's capital, winning widespread popular support, even in the face of arrests. Instead, Nelson appeals to the better nature of a fascist president, calling on it to make good on its lying promise to build a stronger America by investing in our greatest asset, the American worker. In reality, millions of layoffs have been announced under the second Trump administration, including 300,000 federal workers, while social spending is being sucked dry to pay for war. Nelson's embrace and legitimization of Trump's populist phrases, which were meant not to justify aid to workers, but trade war, expresses the nationalist, pro-capitalist orientation of the union bureaucrats, many of whom are openly aligning with Trump. Given Nelson is also a leading member of the Democratic Socialists of America, it also exposes this pseudo-left organization's hostility to an independent movement of the working class. Spirit is the opening act of a broader industry crisis. Jet fuel was roughly $80 per barrel in March. By the week ending April 24, the International Air Transport Association recorded an average of $179 per barrel. The Middle East previously accounted for 75% of Europe's net jet fuel imports, according to the International Energy Agency, whose executive director warned in mid-April that European supplies could be exhausted within weeks. Michael O'Leary, CEO of Irish ultra-low-cost carrier Ryanair, warned CNBC of real failures among European carriers if oil prices remain at $150 through the summer, and acknowledged that such failures would be good for Ryanair's business. EasyJet absorbed £25 million in additional fuel costs in March alone, and posted a headline loss of £540 to £560 million for its most recent six-month reporting period. Lufthansa has cut 20,000 short-haul flights through to October. More bankruptcies in the United States are likely. Industry blog View from the Wing reports one analyst now estimates low-cost carrier JetBlue's probability of bankruptcy by next year at greater than 75%. JetBlue founder Dave Neeleman warned publicly this year that the airline could fail this year. It has not turned a profit in 6 years, carries $9 billion in debt, and faces a potential pre-tax loss exceeding $1 billion in 2026. Frontier Airlines, a direct competitor to Spirit, is already returning aircraft and deferring deliveries. Spirit's 17,000 workers must be made whole. They must not be forced to drain their retirement savings while bankruptcy courts allocates what remains after the secured creditors are paid. The tens of billions in windfall war profits of the oil industry and the major banks must be expropriated to fund full compensation for every worker dislocated by the economic consequences of the Iran war. More broadly, both airline jobs and affordable travel can only be guaranteed by removing the industry from the profit motive. The airlines must be taken out of private hands and operated democratically as a public utility under workers' control. The US-Israeli war in Iran must be ended, with full compensation for the Iranian people and the trial of those war criminals responsible for it. Fighting for this requires new forms of organization for industrial and political struggle. Workers need to build independent rank-and-file committees, connected through the International Workers' Lines of Rank-and-File Committees, to organize across carriers, across borders, and in opposition to the union bureaucracies that seek to manage their defeat. New sanctions, threats, and military exercises set stage for U.S. assault on Cuba. By Andrea Lobo. In what appeared as an offhand remark, Donald Trump openly declared his administration's intentions toward Cuba with chilling clarity last Friday. Speaking before a wealthy audience at the Forum Club of the Palm Beaches, Trump referred to Cuba, which we'll be taking over almost immediately. The comment drew laughter from the crowd, prompting him to elaborate. Cuba's got problems. We'll finish one first. I like to finish the job. On the way back from Iran, we'll have maybe the USS Abraham Lincoln aircraft carrier come in, stop about 100 yards offshore, and they'll say, "Thank you very much. We give up." Far from a joke, the remarks encapsulate the real trajectory of US policy. On the same day, Trump signs an executive order designating Cuba an unusual and extraordinary threat, vastly expanding sanctions against the island. The order targets not only the Cuban state, but also foreign companies engaged in security, energy, finance, mining, or any other sector, as may be determined by the Secretary of the Treasury, in consultation with the Secretary of State. This escalation follows a January declaration of a national emergency against Cuba, which threatened tariffs against any country supplying the island with fuel. However, the latest executive order marks a tactical shift from previous licenses allowing for limited channels for US capital to penetrate Cuba through private actors. This apparent shift away from selective engagement, which sought to cultivate layers within the Cuban capitalist class and state apparatus willing to collaborate with Washington in a regime change operation, marks a sharp escalation of the threat of military action. The unraveling US debacle in Iran heightens the danger of what Trump believes will be a rapid surrender by Havana and a political victory he can score ahead of the November midterm elections. These political and economic measures are unfolding in tandem with a further militarization of the region. One day prior to Trump's remarks, the US Navy announced that its hybrid fleet is ready, following the completion of the Flex 2026 exercises in Key West, Florida, just 90 miles from Cuba's northern coast. The exercises emphasized greater reach, faster decisions, and decisive action across the Caribbean and Central America. While officially framed as an anti-drug operation, the drills incorporated advanced artificial intelligence systems, unmanned platforms, and rapid response integration capabilities. The scale, location, and technological sophistication of these maneuvers belie their stated purpose. Flex 2026 took place directly opposite Cuba, coinciding with intensified intelligence gathering missions mapping the island's defenses, including flights by MQ-4C Triton drones and RC-135 Rivet Joint Reconnaissance aircraft, widely used for preparing precision strikes. Flex 2026 also tested a kill chain scenario against alleged drug boats, as the Pentagon escalates its extrajudicial killing spree that has murdered at least 186 fishermen in the Caribbean and Pacific falsely accused of drug trafficking, underscoring the lawless character of US military activity in the region. The hybrid warfare doctrine being tested, refined through conflicts in Ukraine and the Middle East, is now being directed toward Cuba. This strategy integrates cyber operations, intelligence warfare, economic pressure, and conventional military force into a unified campaign aimed at regime change. These developments expose the fraud of Washington's hemispheric security rhetoric. Under conditions of intensifying global rivalries and the erosion of US hegemony, the Caribbean is once again being transformed into a staging ground for imperialist aggression. However, beyond the geopolitical importance of Cuba, whose waters oversee most US East Coast and Gulf Coast traffic headed to the Panama Canal, US imperialism is preparing a historic assault on Cuba in retribution for the 1959 revolution. In the inaugural speech at the International May Day rally, organized by the International Committee of the Fourth International, WSWS Editorial Board Chairman David North explained, quote, "We denounce the blockade of Cuba, the deliberate strangulation of an entire population through fuel cutoffs and sanctions. Even after two-thirds of a century, the US ruling class has never reconciled itself to the Cuban Revolution. Between 1959 and 1960, the Castro regime expropriated some $1.8 billion in US corporate assets. In the same stroke, the revolution dismantled the mob empire that flourished under the dictatorship of Batista." Unquote. The current escalation builds directly on the April 10 White House delegation to Havana, the first such visit since 2016, which effectively delivered a war ultimatum to the Cuban government. During that meeting, US officials demanded sweeping economic and political concessions as a pretext for escalation, including the release of all political prisoners within weeks, the further opening of the economy, and compensation for expropriated US assets. The Trump administration has sought to manufacture a casus belli. In mid-April, the White House informed Congress that Cuba had allegedly assisted in recruiting 5,000 fighters for Russia in the war in Ukraine. In reality, the Cuban government even initiated criminal proceedings against individuals accused of human trafficking related to recruitment efforts. Meanwhile, the island's economic situation continues to deteriorate under the weight of the US blockade. The arrival in late March of the Russian tanker Anatoly Kolodkin, permitted to pass by Trump, provided only fleeting relief, supplying enough fuel for approximately 10 days once refined. A second tanker en route to Cuba was recently observed changing course, remaining weeks away with a smaller cargo. Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova denounced Washington's blackmail and threats against Havana, reaffirming Moscow's formal solidarity. However, Russia's limited fuel shipments are less an expression of principled support than a bargaining chip in broader negotiations with the United States over Ukraine, the Middle East, and other geopolitical flashpoints. Faced with mounting pressure, Havana has responded with a contradictory policy combining concessions and nationalist rhetoric. On one hand, Cuban officials have opened the door to unrestricted foreign investment and provided guarantees to U.S. corporations during backroom talks involving sections of the Cuban government. On the other hand, the government has issued warnings of imminent military danger. On May Day, Cuban President Miguel Díaz-Canel and his predecessor Raúl Castro led a march of hundreds of thousands to the U.S. embassy, denouncing threats of military intervention and calling on the population to prepare to defend the country. At the same time, Havana continues to appeal to rival powers for support. In late April, during a gathering in Moscow involving Stalinist and bourgeois nationalist organizations forming a so-called International Socialist Network, Fidel Castro Smirnov, the grandson of Fidel Castro, denounced the U.S. embargo, stating it has cost Cuba more than $144 billion and is now asphyxiating the island. His remarks, "Fidel is here with us, dreaming, riding on," were met with a standing ovation. This participation underscores efforts by the Cuban leadership, alongside figures such as Nicaragua's Sandinistas and Bolivia's Evo Morales, to maintain ties with Moscow while navigating escalating US aggression. Yet these maneuvers reveal the fundamental bankruptcy of the Cuban ruling elite and all bourgeois nationalist leaderships. While one wing appeals to Russia and China, another reportedly engages in discussions with Washington aimed at overseeing a transition toward a pro-US regime, similar to developments in Venezuela, where sections of the Chavista leadership have overseen the transformation of the country into a US semi-colony following the kidnapping of President Nicolas Maduro. The convergence of sanctions, military preparations, and political ultimatums makes clear that the Trump administration is laying the groundwork for a direct confrontation with Cuba. Trump's open threats, the expansion of economic warfare, and the deployment of advanced military capabilities in the Caribbean all point toward the same objective: the reimposition of a puppet regime akin to Fulgencio Batista's. For workers in Cuba, the United States, and across the Americas, these developments pose urgent and decisive questions. The defense of Cuba cannot be entrusted to a leadership that seeks accommodation with imperialism, nor any section of the U.S. Democratic Party establishment that has long backed regime change in Cuba. The struggle against war and imperialism requires the independent mobilization of the working class on an international scale, using its economic power to halt the U.S. embargo on Cuba and any military aggression. For these articles and more today, visit the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been John Davis.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.